at the special meeting.
It's 6 p.m., and I would like to call the special meeting, February 11th, 2026, of the Motville Planning and Zoning Commission to order. We're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Yes. Commissioner Lockton.
Here.
Commissioner Terry.
Here.
Commissioner Gillette.
Absent.
Commissioner Pike.
Here.
Commissioner Jardine, I am here. Commissioner Levy, she's absent. And Commissioner Kovalek is here. Commissioner Summers.
Present.
Chairperson, Chairman Pinias.
Here.
And Myers.
Mark Myers, and we're going to seat Mark for Sarah Lundy. Okay, agenda item number four, which is our working session for the town comprehensive plan update. And I'm going to turn it over to you. All right, thank you.
I'm going to turn it over to Steve. Oh.
When we get to any presentations that are going to happen up here, anyone here would like to sit in the front row and look up and see it on the screen, please feel free. Okay.
Right.
Item C, we can grab a soft chair in the front.
All right, okay.
Okay, Meredith.
So in your packet, there is a summary. Commissioner Terry had asked me to give some suggestions on updating the fees that we charge for site plans and for building permits. So I did do the tables. I added a column that highlighted in yellow with my suggestions. I didn't want to go too crazy and increasing too high increases. So I tried to find a happy medium. And also in that packet, I gave an explanation of what each application consists of and the staff level, what it costs per hour for the town engineer, what it costs per hour for the town attorney, the cost of any of the reasons in the daily paper, such as every decision has to be noticed, every public hearing has to be noticed. Would you like me to go through them one by one? Would you like to digest it, and talk about it next time? Yes.
I have a question. Are all of the fees that you've suggested in this from this ordinance? The ordinance that lists all the fees?
The 2017 ordinance?
Yeah, the chapter 214-3 in the town charter.
Yes.
So all of these reflect this, every single one.
So, for example, the very first thing you have here is a single-family residence. We charge right now $50, right?
Right now for a...
But you said, you know how it comes with you call it inflation and everything else, we should really be charged $125.
That was my suggestion.
That you should not... Okay, yeah, that's all reasonable.
And the reason that I suggested that is, if you look on page 3 of the explanation... For a zoning permit for a single-family residence, Stacy has to review the site plan and building plans. She has to review the building permit application because sometimes they'll apply for one thing with Stacy and they upload completely different building plans for the building application. She issues a bond request letter, has to bring that up to the finance department. She has to go out and do an erosion and sediment control inspection. If the foundation is close to the property lines, it has to be staked out, and she has to go and make sure that's been staked out. Typically, for a single-family residence, if it's moving along at a good pace, she'll go out 2 to 3 more times during the construction for inspections, and then she'll do a final inspection, a CDC inspection of the as-built. And then she comes back to the office, she reviews the as-built to make sure the as-built matches what was permitted as well as what she saw in the field. And then she has to go into the building software and sign off.
So the bottom line, you call it the person getting the application is getting his money's worth.
I would think.
Yeah, the town loses about $500.
Yeah, well, you know, they're pretty lucky, you know, that they're going to add an extra $500 and they really be having people be pulling their hair out.
It's common in the
community and the zoning side. Yeah, you know, so what do you have the crab about, you know?
We don't have to have a building, so 2%
or whatever
the fee is, you know.
Right. Yeah, that same single-family residence, just from past experience, building permit fee will be $3,000 plus. Okay, so and there's probably maybe there's a couple more inspections than ZEO has involved, but you know, yeah. So that it's still a bargain, and my suggestion is it probably should get incrementally raised on an annual basis.
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like we're tripling the fee every time. It's all going to be the same, but
it looks better. It doesn't look like
they'll have a stick.
Cost of doing business goes up 3% minimum a year, right? That's
seems like my insurance.
Well, an issue with all of these fees, the fees go to the general fund.
Yeah.
They don't go to the department.
Yeah.
That's an issue. Yeah. That's always an issue.
We do at the end of the year give a report.
But you collect the fees. It goes to the general fund.
Yeah.
Doesn't go to the department to help pay for education or any other activities.
Well, that's the way it is in every department. I mean,
that's on the building department.
As a town clerk, I used to bring way more money in than I spent.
Right.
But I used to be told it doesn't matter. That's your job. You bring in fees. You know what I mean? That never mattered to them.
Right. But it's an issue.
In fairness on that side, we are going through the budget process right now. I think it's going to pay with the department budget. And, you know, there are funds that are getting assigned to the department that come out of it. Otherwise, it would be the general fund.
Right. Right.
I mean, generally speaking, the fees are modest.
I believe so.
Very modest. And
thing that I would like to point out currently, if an application comes before this commission, a site plan application, a special permit application, a subdivision application, and then a zoning permit, so Dollar General came in, they had $150 fee for a site plan application. The zoning permit gets issued. At this time, the zoning permit is $0. So we get $150. Kyle's $170 an hour. That's why I'm suggesting that we go up to $300 for the site plan review and then $300 for the zoning. So that way, Stacy's inspections, they're not going to be covered 100%.
Right.
Also, special permits right now and zone changes and map changes and text amendment changes, $450. That includes the town attorney looking at it. Kyle, if it's something that we need him to look at for a special permit application, we have to notice the public hearing twice in the paper. Those fees are anywhere from $300 to $400, and we get $450.
Do you have to put it in the newspaper if you're on the web? If you're on the town website?
Yes.
They tried doing that. It was lobbied to do it. Several years ago, it was a couple of days in the newspaper.
And then once it's approved or denied, you have to notice that decision in the paper. If you don't notice it in the paper, say you deny something and you don't notice it in the paper within 10 days, the applicant can notice it as approved and it's approved.
Mm.
So we're not saving any of those fees.
Mm.
And that's typically about $100 per advertisement for that.
Mm.
It's all based on the number of characters. We don't bold anything because that's like triple the money. So we try to
keep it short and simple.
Abbreviate where we can abbreviate. Yes.
Now, some of this says thoughts. Do you want decisions tonight, like under modified site plan administrative approval? Thoughts?
So, Mike, I did put through your thoughts there. Currently, Stacy and I, somebody comes in and says, we need to move this over 5 feet. Stacy and I will go out there, we'll look at it. we send it off to the engineer to look at. If that's administratively done and they don't come back before this commission, there's no charge for that. But Kyle has to look at it at $170. Stacy and I have to go out there. Some of this is, yes, part of what we do and what we should be doing.
So,
we need those at...
So everything in here that does not have a fee listed is without charge?
If it has a zero for Arcom, it's without charge. The other, if you go across, like we have nothing here, but that's because we don't charge by square footage like the city of Groton and the town of Groton and Waterford. So other towns broke it out even more. So I put it in the category that we charge for.
Okay.
So all site plans are the same. 1,000 square feet or 100,000 square feet, where other towns would
break
it out by square feet.
Mm-hmm. So, example, the stuff that is blank, we don't charge for it, or it follow up like something like, essentially, drawing 75,000 suggested. Then everything under that falls under that, right?
Right. But other towns break it out more. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you might do 50 for a shed, 25 for a pool.
Thought, not anywhere carved in stone, legal publications, could that just be an added expense to the applicant?
That's what I suggest.
We don't eat that if it requires two notices and, you know, a denial notice or an approval notice and let that become part of the fee. And
some towns do that.
Yeah, the denial and approval might get a little difficult because if there's 10 applications that night, we group them all together. I guess
gotcha.
We could divide it by 10 or...
I think we're thinking of the specific for that.
Just for the public
hearing.
Okay.
If they want it a couple different times and then perhaps we can take them off.
Yeah. To make it fit.
So we have budgeted... Last few years, each year, we're spending $6,000 a year for digital advertising. Mm-hmm. And I think a couple years ago, we broke that. We were at about $3,500, I think, now. And we're just over halfway through the year, 60% through the year. We're putting in $6,000 again next year. But we don't require a lot of special permits in town anyway. So there's a lot in comparison to what other towns do. And I just want to just make a mention of the fee for third parties like our town engineer, CLA, appropriate for us to absorb those costs to a certain degree because we don't have an on-staff civil engineer, where another community had a staff engineer on either DPW or whatever department, they would be doing that review and they would be coming out. Now, there might be a large application or a complex application of some sort, where it's going to have an extra amount of time for an engineer, you do have the right to charge the applicant that third party would be so staff would advise where that would be an appropriate time for the commission to consider. I've been involved in projects, large scale projects, where third party reviews are over $100,000 that applicants have paid, so that's not common. So.
And we do have in that ordinance that Lisa had pointed out, the first two reviews by the town engineer are included in the application fee. The third, so Kyle gets it, he reviews it, he gives a list of comments. The applicant should then take that list and complete it. He looks at it for the second time. Yes, it's complete. All is good. If they miss something,
I've never understood
that. They then pay for the third time.
They're already getting paid,
which is fair. Is
it fair? But he bills us twice. Kyle bills us twice? Okay, so I'm having a real hard time absorbing these numbers because we're in a business as a business. We're not a charity organization. Towns aren't charity.
No.
And I'm not saying this is charity, but I want to know, how did you come to 125? Because to me, I'm not a developer, one sitting next to me, very prominent one. That seems extremely modest when you're building $500,000-$600,000 homes.
Right now we're at 50, so I didn't want to be like...
I know, but how'd you get 125 based on the numbers we're talking of cost here?
I didn't... numbers and didn't want to go too high, kind of semi.
So it's kind of a regional appraisal of
like an estimate of yeah, like what
of other rates are.
Office. And no, we're not getting anywhere near that.
And I can live with that, but shouldn't we be close to our neighbors?
Yeah.
So that's what this is in the spreadsheet for. So for single family residents.
I did see that. I did see that over there. I did.
Okay. And I mean, I went a little higher.
But I think we need to go higher, right?
You're
indicating we need to go higher.
My thought is we start with these, which some are double. The site plans like double.
So that can you jack it up.
And then maybe yearly we look at it again and increase right. So that it's not. Well, I was paying 150. Now you want 1,000. What are you doing for me that's any different? You know, and I'm not saying
I
that.
Think like if I was an EB
in a bad way, but.
If my boss came to me,
I know you wanted to not have them. Heck,
yeah, you got to find a happy medium where you don't have mutiny on.
We're just going to cost you $75.
Just like
you're
doing that.
Do you think that's a reasonable number? 125?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But then next year 150.
But say
it's true.
No, I mean
220% increases.
No, I understand that, but right. You're a prominent developer, Bill. I mean, everybody knows that about you in town. That you think that's a reasonable number to propose? I mean, I think it's reasonable. Yeah. If we're going to take a loss, I guess we take a loss overall.
We're not for profit.
Yeah, not for
towns
profit.
Towns are
not
for
profit.
Profit.
Yeah.
No. First of all, we're not a business. Yeah. We're not for profit.
Yeah.
No, but
that's
should.
My opinion.
Yeah, you know, we're break even, hopefully.
And I think this is a good start because we're not shocking people.
Yeah.
But we are raising the fees.
Yeah. We want to break even.
And we have a lot of repeat developers, so that was kind of my thought, too. They're used to paying this, and which might not
You'll get the fair share of them. That'll
get your moan.
Go through the roof. That's 2.5 times what they were paying.
Nah.
But yes, those are reasonable numbers. Still, you know, my suggestion: do we want to go through this in our next meeting? If you have any suggested changes, rates, let's address them and make a plan to adopt them. What do you think?
And I'm not. Set in stone if you have other.
No, I certainly trust the land use department's opinion on this. I just was trying to understand when you look at the overall cost and what we're charging, that's what I'm really trying to understand how you came to 125 and you've explained it.
It was just trying
not
to put a.
Yep. It is a public service that the town's offering.
Agree.
Right. I mean, you know, this. It's not a moneymaker.
Yeah.
And it's still a service that's being provided that you're absorbing the brunt of the cost.
The brunt of the cost, right. Yeah.
But, yeah, and we should just look at them to.
I mean, how fast do you want to move this?
Well, if you're all ready, then we have to go to TARC.
Well, it's got to set the date for a public hearing. That's another 30 days, so we're looking at an ordinance hearing. I don't know. I mean,
well, that was a question that was asked before. Is this an ordinance or is this the fees part of a resolution?
It's part of an ordinance. I have it right here.
Yep.
Okay.
Chapter 214.
Then it should be changed to be a resolution. That way, there's not the additional advertising fees in the future. Town council could just adopt. The fees by resolution.
And it's, ordinance, it's, they have to have a.
I think they all have to be done by ordinance. They're all in here. Building.
They
fees.
Don't have to be. They can.
Well,
they
I
can
don't
change.
Know why we wouldn't keep.
They can change it. A lot of municipalities for the building department and zoning, they change their fee structure. The base fee structure is an ordinance on the process. The numbers are adopted by a resolution. So.
I think what we're asking is we brought this forth to consideration one more time that we're not in a rush to do this. Mm-hmm. If we visit the next meeting later this month or in March, I think it would be appropriate for a motion to to recommend to town council to consideration and get that decision already adopted.
A quick question. I mean, you've addressed all of the fees, and what you suggested does represent an increase on all of them, correct?
All but
there was two. I can't find the second one.
No increase on the letters for zoning compliance.
Yep.
For CC. Patients.
What's the thing for
CC inspection?
How about professional legal consultations?
Yeah, they were just going there.
What do you want to do there?
That isn't one that we currently, that's another town that charges, I think that is.
Where is that, Lisa?
That
second page.
Second page?
It says thoughts under. So we don't, no one really charges for that except.
We don't normally charge for that.
Okay.
But like that,
I'm sorry, third page. Third page.
John, under the road standards, has a whole schedule. So there's special inspections that have to be done, like up on Chapel Hill right now. Special inspections are being done of those roads. John gets those fees from the developer. So that's out of our hands and in the.
Can you, so the Public Works Director gets the fees directly? Is that what you're saying?
So right now, like Chapel Hill?
Yes, Cherry Hill, Chapel Hill, yeah.
CLA is going out and doing special inspections. There's a whole list of what inspections have to be done in the road standards because they're building a public road.
Yep.
And does Public Works turn that those funds over to the general fund at the end of the year?
I believe it's all general fund, yeah. So Kyle gave an estimate of what it would cost. They brought in a check. When they use up that money, they bring in another deposit.
So the developer is responsible for the special inspections on those town improvements that they're building into their subdivision.
Got it.
We've paid him in the past on the roads we've built, etc.
Carol Drive.
Public Works didn't have a town ordinance to raise their rates this year.
This is in front of the Wetlands Commission.
We paid to the
general fund. They
didn't.
They
had no public hearing.
Did they raise the transfer station fees? I think they have to publicly note it. Did they put it on the transfer station?
I think there was a notice put on.
Joe?
Yes.
Yo. But the town council wasn't involved at all.
John, you feel comfortable with what's proposed there now?
They didn't
send a.
You can't raise the fees.
An approval to staff to move forward with this stuff?
Yeah, we got a living document.
With the recommendation. It goes on an annual review.
Yeah.
Just like anything else we do once a year, let's take a peek at the fees.
Yeah.
Lease?
Yeah, what the year?
Yep.
Are you comfortable with what's proposed in an increase here for now? And
yeah.
Then,
I think it's a good job. I think you did a good job.
Yeah.
Moving forward, we make it a policy where we look at them once a year.
Yeah, it's a living
maybe
document.
Before the beginning of the fiscal year.
Yeah.
That's when we would collect our new revenue for that next fiscal. Maybe in June or something, we look at it.
Yeah.
All right. So would you like a vote on this?
You're ready to move forward.
Go for it.
So I'll entertain a motion to propose these suggested fees.
So moved.
Okay. Thank you.
Second.
All right. We have a motion and a second from Mr. Summers. And any discussion on the motion? Go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, I would like to know if we could, you know, when we discuss before the fiscal year, that you give us an accounting of each of these items, how the total that was taken in for that, so that we can then balance that against what we're suggesting for the coming year.
Yeah. Income versus expenses.
It's part of our annual report that we
do. Right, but when we have that specific meeting, that information be presented.
Yeah, we'll add that thought to the motion. Okay.
Yes.
Any other discussion on it? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Anyone oppose?
Good.
Anyone abstain? Very good.
Go
Thank
for
you.
It. Takes care of that.
Okay, 4B, zoning assessment for the Route 32, Route 163 investment plan by DJH Advisors.
Oh, yeah.
So this DJH Advisors is the consultant team on the Route 32 and 163 study. I will be talking about them a lot tonight. Part of their scope of work is to do a review of our zoning regulations, not to draft new zoning, but to do a review of how it is currently and how it impacts the overall strategy, investment strategy that they are going to be putting together as part of the plan. This is their first stab at a draft assessment looking at our zonings, and they look specifically at the 32 and 163 for the water within the study area, which is basically all 32 and 163 out of the water tower. So a lot of the discussion really revolves around the overlay zone and how that works with the overall direction written in the head. I think looking, I'm not going to get into all the details of this. This is just sent out to you as a primer for our next meeting. If you have an opportunity to ask questions tonight, I'm happy to try to answer them. I think I'm going to give you some highlights of it. They use the term on the, a lot of things, and a lot of the discussion here is on the Route 32 overlay zone, and that the, it is a good mechanism or foundation for flexibility in zoning. It's a very commonly used mechanism in strategy as an alternative for the being forced to use underlying district. However, as they described it, it's very ambiguous in that it's very simplistic in that it just basically says, yeah, you can do what you want under the uses within the district. But the only benefit you really get is that you can mix uses, or you can't mix uses if you don't use the overlay zone. So they still have to follow the bulk standards, the setbacks that are in the underlying zone, et cetera. So the building height, which as we talked about, there's no building height in certain zones. There's the concept is there. Generally, this type of district, like our adaptive use regulation, allows for more greater flexibility in design. It's usually done by a flush permit. So that way the commission then has controls to allow that flexibility. So in this case, it just all defaults back to the underlying zone. It just says you can mix them. So long story short, saying it needs work to really accomplish what it's trying to accomplish. It might even be that it's not even appropriate, and that we might need to look at all the zoning in a long-term or our, new type of zoning districts, scratching the C1, C2, as well. It goes into talking about design standards and how to control design. Positive side of controlling design and placemaking for creating town centers that we're talking about under the study. There's a brief evaluation on the housing bill. We'll talk a little bit more later. Well, they focus mainly on the parking requirements, the much larger discussion related to residential uses that have to be allowed by as of right, or what the statute calls suburban use. Design guidelines, as I said, one of the elements is if towns, we have a the town of Montville hasn't done it, although we put it into the adaptive use, so we have to change it. But you can't simply say things have to be designed or a project has to be designed by community character, or the housing bill. So you want to regulate design, you have to actually have design guidelines. Discussion point
then it concludes with a series of recommendations. And they're pretty quick and easy to use. We can have a broader discussion.
I'm just curious your thoughts on you. You made a comment that maybe just do away with C1 and C2 and start from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, it goes into what we're going to be looking at with the housing bill. They have what's called a housing growth zone option. They have transit-oriented development districts as well. These help to focus housing development and mixed use in key areas. And use these types of zoning districts. You establish them. They help you to meet your quota for affordable housing without actually having to build or get building permits. But based upon density, so you can kind of get, it's like the carrot. So for every unit that you theoretically could get, for every 100 units, let's say theoretically you get a credit maybe of 10 units towards your housing threshold to meet your 10% affordable appeals act. So there's that aspect that we might want to look at. It also positions the town to receive funding when you adopt these types of zoning districts as well. So it puts you in the pipeline to get access to funds for infrastructure, roadway projects, new development,
these
are aspects of what we're
going
to need to explore over the next 12 to 24 months.
They're all state funds or mixed?
State funds, yeah.
State funds, thank you.
There's going to be a new, I forgot what they call it, but there's a new housing growth fund, I think it's called, and then there's another one that is for transit-oriented development fund. There's a number of them that are out there. There's also village districts, which has been around for a while. But that might be something to consider for certain locations too. That gives you the utmost of control on design. There's other mechanisms too.
Could you give me an example of the overlay zone, for example, where you have a mixed-use commercial and a multifamily, what would that look like?
Have we done in
housing? Yeah. I'm not previously familiar with the concept, so I'm struggling a little bit.
Well, usually you come in with a principal use, one use. So if somebody wants to do a development on a site, in our zoning districts, we've got a list of principal uses, and then we've got accessory uses. And generally, you can't have more than one principal use, but then you can do a mixed use under the overlay zone. So I guess we're Shantok Package Store.
Yeah, that one we just did,
whole
right?
Thing, yeah.
I was just thinking about that.
That'd be a good example.
Because they have residential and they have commercial.
Oh, look down New London or Norwich. You used to walk down there. I mean, bottom would be stores. Second would be office. Third would be apartments. You know, that's it.
Okay. So, well, excuse me, not being familiar with the concept very well, what I had envisioned was something like a guy opens up a hardware store. That's commercial.
Yeah.
But the family lives upstairs. So that's the kind of thing,
yeah.
Only with multifamily, not single family.
Well, nature's art.
Yeah.
Above nature's art, there's three apartments.
Yeah. Or
I didn't know that. Thank you.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Same thing. Like in Norwich, one of the general stores, you call it
the one that we
lives above the general store.
Nature's Art Center. The top floor is dwelling units for
Oh, she's going to strike that out now.
And that's the way it's been permitted from when it was built.
But Shantok is a very recent example.
Yeah, project,
right,
yeah.
With the retail.
And then in
C1
and C2, we allow commercial on the bottom and residential on the top, or apartments on the top. So yeah. A lot of our regulations.
So that's mixed use?
Yeah, it's mixed use, yeah.
Okay.
Call it one thing, one place, one
okay,
thing.
I understand.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, the zone, which is one of the reasons why I think it's saying maybe get rid of it and start new. The zone goes from Route 32 to Fainter. So the Lakebrook development. You could potentially, if you had a large enough piece over there, have a commercial entity.
A grocery store.
That development, because it allows any commercial use that's allowed in C1 or C2, even if it's not a residential piece of property.
Like a grocery store.
A restaurant.
When it was adopted here, from my recollection, it was presented as a much simpler use and a very vague, broad.
Very
vague. Okay. Allowable uses, and
surprised myself that I didn't understand that.
Would you read?
Well, you did.
Well,
you kind of did.
A long time ago, too, right?
Yeah. Did kind of know it.
Yeah, I just hadn't seen it written down.
Yeah, I think we did.
The 14A3.
I'm assuming all of this is going to get accomplished with zoning regulation changes.
A mixture of permitted commercial uses and structures.
Probably over time, these are proposals to be incorporated.
It doesn't say one use is a mixture. Right. So I think they should have any default back to the uses that are allowed or the underlying uses.
Hiring somebody to create it. And we still have to consider it both.
Mm. Well, it at one time was presented that way.
I don't know that.
I'm confused. What?
Because then our commercial zone is anything for profit,
which means you look at that entire thing.
I want time to absorb this.
I got to read all this more.
There's a lot going on over there, and there's a lot of sensitivity. And we have a legal obligation. Protect those lands. I'm talking about tribal lands, whether they're in trust or not. We have a legal obligation to protect cultural resources, and the statute specifically says tribal resources. So it opens up everything.
The town has a responsibility to protect tribal lands.
Zoning,
that would you
under the state statutes of zoning, that is one of the requirements.
Yeah, cultural landscapes.
Which includes tribal resources. It doesn't mean tribal lands.
Okay, I wanted to clarify that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to clarify that.
There might be sensitive archaeological areas that aren't in trust yet,
Got it.
But it's not even just, I don't think you're picking on that, but I mean, it could be others, but other types of cultural assets as well. So. I mean, it opens up a lot.
In the presentation we're going to get from the consultants is going to address some suggestions.
Yeah, so I will, why don't I jump to that agenda item? Item B, I just want to mention that they're going to be, the team, we have a steering committee meeting on Thursday of this week. Chairman, you're on the steering committee. Commissioner Gillette is on it?
Yes.
So they're going to be presenting draft recommendations to the steering committee. As part of our grant obligation, the Planning and Zoning Commission needs to consider the findings of the report and recommendations of whether or not they should be adopted as part of the POC date, either in whole or in part. There's going to need to be some sort of redetermination sooner rather than later of whether or not that's going to happen. So you can report back as part of the recommendation that you're considering. So rather than waiting to the end, I've asked the team to come in and present to you directly, because this is
steering committee, which is a subcommittee of this commission, gets a bite at the apple, right? We're going to come to you, I've asked them to come to you, so you have an opportunity. So that's why we've polled everybody to ask if you can make it for 5 o'clock for a special meeting on the 24th from 5 to 6.
Of this month?
Of this month, yeah. So that's an hour before the regular meeting.
Is that enough time?
We'll cram it in, yeah.
At 6 o'clock, we have a public hearing that's already been noticed, so we'll cram it in.
But there's going to be a lot of good information that this commission needs to hear.
If you want, and if you're able to start earlier than that, or
how about a special meeting?
Special, whatever.
It's probably going to have to be.
look at me. I don't know. I would rather do a special than come an hour before a meeting. That's just me.
Special, fine. Okay, everything special.
Well,
look at everybody. Look at me.
Being
I'm sorry.
To that meeting at 5 o'clock. Okay. Have a forum, it's going to be a special meeting. It's probably going to be posted as a special meeting.
No, so we're planning to do it.
Yeah.
Posting it as a
special meeting. So be here at 5 o'clock.
The consultants said we have to pick a date. I think that
we're also working under their...
We're working under their availability, kind of committed to that 5 o'clock hour on that meeting date, unfortunately.
What the heck.
I think their presentation probably would be about 20 minutes, 15 to 20 minutes, and then have majority of the time do questions and answers.
So 5 o'clock, be here.
Love
that. Yeah. And you'll get two agendas for that, one for the special.
Okay, that'd be fabulous.
Can everybody make it?
Oh, yeah. I can, yes. I'll just tell the wife, hey, I'm coming.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry, yes.
Because they did it.
It's not a good time for me.
Were you good?
Yeah.
What day?
24th, 5 o'clock.
A regular meeting.
We have a regular meeting that 24th. Starting at 6, we're asking you to come in for 5. Yeah. I'll take you out to dinner after if you
want. Really? Oh, wow.
Going to go to the Golden Arches restaurant?
Golden Arches.
We go to a friendly place, that door.
This is an ad service. It's out of their scope, so pay an extra for this. So, but it's important that this.
Yeah, a lot of information, a lot of good information, and.
And there's a steering committee meeting tomorrow night at 5 o'clock in room 203. If anyone wants to attend.
203. What time is that one?
5 o'clock.
Oh, and what day? Same day.
Tomorrow.
I have to look and see if my wife will let me.
Okay.
Yeah, very good.
Do you want to grab the popcorn and go sit in the chair? And I can.
So we'll hit agenda item 4C. Before we go, do you want to? You got some good feedback today on another grant.
Yes. So the housing
just to let everybody know.
Yep, that's item D. I'm going to give you an update, but as of about 2 or 3 hours ago, I noticed that it looks like we will be getting the housing grant from the Department of Housing, which we were asking $125,000 to develop our housing plan, which is also a portion of our PUCD.
Really quick.
Zoning updates, it'll help fund a little bit of the subdivision and design guidelines.
Yeah, great job.
Good.
Staff that I've been working with and that I met with a couple weeks ago, they reviewed the material that was submitted, they favorably looked at it, and they're making they drafted a letter to the commissioner recommending the full award of $125,000, which is the top threshold that they will award.
Yep, good job.
Excellent job, Dennis.
Yep.
Very good.
It's a 95% certainty.
Well, we certainly need the money.
That was fast.
It's a rolling thing, and I thank the CLAB for connecting me with the individual, and they are an enthusiastic group of people, and I told them that we want to be their poster child for housing planning.
Great.
We want you to be that housing child, that poster child.
Good. Thank you very much. All right. We can. If you want to move to the chairs.
This will be a fairly brief presentation.
Okay, whatever. Oh, yeah, we can see it from there, too. I can see it from here, too. Can you see all right? Yeah, we can see it from here.
Your eyes are going to go bad sitting too close to the TV.
What?
Your eyes are going to go bad sitting too close to the TV.
Yeah, we're going to go blind. Well, I'm blind already. The intro to tax.
On Monday night, I presented tax increment financing to the town council to introduce them to what the concept is. So this is another intent. Is this another tool in the toolbox?
Yeah.
And it's really, it's a funding tool. I talked about the housing, the two housing zones that would open up the door. Mm-hmm. If TIF is something that the town wants to move forward with, this possibly could be a third funding stream as well. I thought it was important to bring this up. This is a legislative action. If to adopt it, it would be the council's decision and management and responsibility. It would not be your commission's responsibility, but it would be referred to you for a favorable or unfavorable recommendation. So, but first of all, tax increment financing is not a new tax at all. It is also not a tax abatement as well. So, it is, as I said, it's a tool for reinvestment. It's basically you're telling the development community and your citizens that you're dedicated to creating a destination or a place, which could be a town center, it could be a retail hub that helps to provide services that may not otherwise come to your town if you don't have a TIF district, and that has to do with how it gets financed, which I'll talk about in a moment. It could also be used for industrial zones. I'm saying this more in the context of a town center. This is in the context of the Route 32 study, because it is going to be a recommendation coming out of that study. I just wanted to give you the primer, and you'll see a little bit more why. TIF has been around for quite a while, but in 2015 it was updated in the state statutes. Bottom line is, pre-2015 it was very burdensome. It was very difficult to use. Nobody used it. The state streamlined the entire process. It's all locally controlled. The state has nothing to do with it. There's a lot of flexibility of how you use the funds that are generated through the normal progression of tax increases. And a number of communities throughout the state have been using it. Windsor is one of the I think it was at the forefront of it with their transit hub in the Groton, the town, the Groton city is doing it. I was the planner, city of Groton, and I worked through and helped get their TIF district adopted in the city. New London, you can see the list on here, and I'm sure there's others out there as well.
Hmm.
So it is a legislative process that town council has control over. I was suggesting that if council was interested, that perhaps an advisory committee would make sense to help establish it or set the initial guidelines and then help monitor it on the advisory basis to the council moving forward. But you establish a policy first, which is sort of the governing document. It's sort of, I guess you can say, the zoning regulations of a TIF district, of how it was formed, if you will. Maybe that's not a good way to describe it. And then you develop a TIF district master plan, which identifies the limits of the district and how the funds are used. It isn't a master plan in the sense of pretty pictures and how it's going to look or anything like that. It could be, but it's not. And then there's a management aspect of it as well. How it works, and this is at the very basics of it, which is about as much as I really know, because I never really got into the operations of it. But at the time you adopt the master plan, you set the original assessed value, which I call the baseline. So wherever the assessment is at that time, that's your baseline tax level. Anything beyond that, so when you're doing your assessments each on real property, when that happens, that becomes what's called the captured assessed value. that value goes back, goes into the TIF district fund and can be used to support development in the TIF district. Everything that's below that original assessed value or that baseline goes into the general fund. So you're not taking all the money out and putting it into just the district. You still have money that's going into the general fund. The captured value could be, it could be all of it that goes into the TIF district. Or it could be 50% or it could be 75%. So if it's 50%, 50% goes into the district, 50% goes into the general fund. So you're basically 75% is going into the fund and into the general fund, and 25% goes into the tax, into the TIF district.
How do you get from the original to the capture?
The intent, and that's why the third bar there shows a drop, the intent is that tax assessments are going to go up and rise.
It's the difference between
The original
and then how much they go up. That's capture.
Yeah, that's the capture.
So that's at the discretion of the town council because that can be very flexible, right?
Oh, yeah.
It can be any percentage. And a TIF district can last for as long as up to 50 years, and it can be modified at any time.
Extreme situation. Suppose the general fund needed money. Could they take all the capture and move it into general?
I don't believe they have that discretion that if you say that 50% of that district funds has to go into the district, you can't just go in and rob it.
Thank you.
Maybe there's some caveats in there and some fine print that I'm not aware of, but my understanding is no.
So the captured funding is basically a lockbox?
Yes. But... So one of the benefits of this is that and this is one of the things that we're hearing as part of the study too is that there's no real town center. There's no place for town green, coffee shops and places for people to walk around in that place that people can rally around for an identity, which goes into quality of life, which then goes into people just general enjoyment and overall thriving of the community. It spirals outside of the TIF district into other districts as well. Everybody starts to succeed if that one area starts to succeed. So there's the intangible benefits of investing in one area by increasing the quality of life outside it, whether it's emotional or physical. So what can be used for? It can be used for anything that supports the TIF district. It doesn't have to be in the boundaries of the district. So, for instance, if you have a district that doesn't have the WPCA facility in it, but the WPCA facility needs to be expanded to promote to support development that's going in the district, then it can be improved. If a roadway needs to be improved outside of a district, but because it needs to support the people that are going in the district, that portion of the roadway can still be improved even though it's not in. Whatever you put in the master plan, you can dream, you can mark it down, you write it down, it's whatever can be used for the physical built environment to supporting small businesses with loans, grants, training, marketing, et cetera. So there's a lot of discretion. This is probably one of the biggest draws of a tax a TIF district is what's called a credit enhancement agreement. These can only be used if you have a TIF district. And this is like TIF is not a tax abatement. This is not a tax abatement in the traditional sense that where a tax abatement, you're telling somebody for however many years, we're going to cut your property tax by 50%. You never have to pay that. With the CEA agreement, you are entering into an agreement with a developer, and you're saying that you pay us, you develop that property for whatever it is, and in some cases, and the reason you would use a CEA is the developer can't make the finances work through traditional funding because of the type of a program. It might be unique that you might want to have a number of, I'm going to say, senior housing, and the return on what the rents might be isn't going to support the development. So they need to have some sort of leverage to help get the project moving and to be sustainable. Or it could be other affordable housing, or it could be a brownfield that needs a lot of cleanup work, where, you know, Oxo-Boxo, my understanding is that took a while to get going. It had to get a lot of subsidies from the state to get cleaned up. This could be something that could help offset that, help really kick things going right away. So what happens is you agree on the tax that the developer gets back. They know they're going to get a guaranteed return. So they have to have their taxes in hand. They have to pay you, the town, 100% of what they owe. And then by the CEA, whatever the terms are that's negotiated, you give them back 50% of that money. And then that has to be used to pay back their loans and their financing to help support, because there might be a shortfall in their pro forma for what their program is or their cleanup costs or whatever it might be. What's so much different than a tax abatement is that if they, this is performance-based, if they're not living up to their end of the bargain, then they're in default of that agreement, and they owe you the taxes, and you don't have to, you don't give them the money back. That could mean they're not, they have a zoning enforcement issue, there's blight, they've let the property go, they have a building code violation or something like that. There could be a host of other matters, but those are things that are jumping to the top of my mind. So it gives the town leverage that the town's investment is going and being used wisely, and then the developer has to live up to their end.
Dennis, so can the captured funds that the town retains, can that be used like a program such as a facade improvement program?
Yes.
Yep. So funds can be put aside.
Yep.
For a facade improvement program, the state funded it, but it was a very successful program. A lot of businesses took advantage of it. It's a way to beautify the Main Street area and businesses.
Hebert's a great example of something that how long it takes. It took a long time. Michael Leary and others had done
it. 5-6 years to get it going, but
I already went through this slide here. So where in Montville, this is a very loose oval. This is the area. So you can see where it says Umpitzville, that's where the town hall is.
Yeah.
So from the town line up past Walgreens, past the vacant Dunkin' site, I just drew a blob. This is the area that we're focusing in on the Route 32 study, which you'll see. So this might be one area. The caveat here is on location. It can be anywhere, but you can't, and you can have as many TIF districts as you want, but they can't, the total of all TIF districts can't be above 10% of the total grant list for real property, not personal property. This has a lot more to do with funding. I wanted to introduce to the council the Connecticut Municipal Development Authority, the CMDA. There's a quasi-public organization, fairly recently established by the state, with the goal of providing technical assistance to communities that have access to transit, such as train stations like downtown New London, or have town commercial centers, and we would qualify for this. There's no cost. We can opt in through a legislative process, and the CMDA provides technical assistance free of charge to assist the community with whatever their land use and development needs might be, and it could also be helping us establish a TIF district, if so be it, or helping us write zoning regulations. As well. They're almost like an extension of the COG, although you have to pay the COG. But the other side of this, when you join CMDA, you establish a defined district in your area. That district then becomes eligible for state funds for projects such as infrastructure, or I think it also goes into, you know, helping with private development as well. So again, it becomes another funding tool. So between TIF, between the CMDA, between some of the housing zones that we might have an opportunity to apply along Route 32, we help to guarantee that we will, and that's a fund. The state has to have the funds, right? Mm-hmm. It does position the community to start having access to monies to further develop our infrastructure and creating the lovely things that we want to create. Thank you.
Well.
Questions for Dennis?
Questions?
Well, digest it first.
Good, Josh. Go ahead.
Would it make sense to try to incorporate more industrial versus commercial and residential? Try to incorporate more industrial into that? I mean, we got. Pardon? In the overlay district. Not very much.
Not very much industrial.
Very, very, very little.
No, but it was always represented that it was in the overlay zone, so...
So you could do anything.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. And, you know, while we're on that topic, and then I think... I mentioned it to Meredith Dennis with our zoning mapping as we're moving forward with our new zoning regs, plan of conservation and development. It would be, I think, one look that we should give in all fairness is the town of Montville as a whole, what pieces of property are taken right out of the picture by reservoirs owned by New London, Norwich, what's in Avalonia, what's in all the conservancies, and color them so we know they're out of the picture.
Yeah.
And then take a look at what remains, what might possibly be industrial, and again, along with trying to meet all the housing needs and what we're trying to accomplish in the Route 32, Route 163 goal of enhancing the town and creating a lot of the amenities and building types that seem to be the attraction of making the town bring more business in. So, you know...
Commissioner Kovalek, your point, and you brought me back to the center here. This map is here because one of the last things I wanted to do was kind of have an exercise and start talking about that and start dreaming about what we need, what we like, what we don't like. And now this map and that exercise takes on more meaning knowing that we're going to get this grant most likely, because we're going to need to balance what our housing growth plan required prepared by 2028 in conjunction with the Council of Governments. There's a lot of different moving parts that we're all trying to get our hands around, right? So I'll come back to answering the question. The housing growth plan, with that, we need to tell the state where we're going to meet our housing goals. The state's going to tell us where our housing goals are. That should be a physical and actual number of housing units, my understanding. I don't know if it's going to say a percentage of affordable housing.
Nothing's really come out. That's a yes.
kindergarten is housing, right? So it's going to tell us where we need to meet those housing. It's going to have to be based upon developing the land. There's a specific definition. So we have to take out steep slopes, land and conservation, wetlands, all that stuff. This map is the first step in trying to do all of that mapping that you're talking about. So when we start to balance what we have to meet there, we start to try to get to like where do we mark for industrial too.
No.
You know, we gotta look at it holistically and what mixes, what doesn't mix. And that's where we start developing the POCD. The POCD needs to set the policy for us to make for you to make decisions, us to give you guidance, you to make the decisions on the zoning.
Right.
So regulations ultimately as it
and to your point, Josh, at a glance, when you do look at the town, there's not a lot of large parcels, that would support the Norwich Industrial Park, for example.
Yeah.
But yet, it is a demand in the area, and I think the study that the group that's working on Route 32 had found that in there, that, the demand for industrial is off the charts and there is nothing vacant or available. And I bring up this point because I think you'll see it when that Route 32-163 plan gets presented to us, there's hopes in there that some of our current operations along the corridor would hopefully move to maybe an industrial park so those properties could get put into a different use that's more in harmony with the 32-163 redevelopment plan. So I don't know if it's an obligation to find them a place, but it would certainly be, I'm a big fan of keep what you have in town for businesses, et cetera. You're ahead of the game. That's one you don't have to go attract. But some of them aren't in the places we want them right now, and maybe we'd want them to go somewhere else. It would be nice to be able to find that property and, make it work.
Yeah, because 163 is where all the mills were back.
Well, if you're asking about industrial uses in the Oz, my first thought is the Oz has water and sewer. A lot of industrial uses can go on the other side of town that doesn't have water and sewer. So maybe not the Oz zone, but a...
And again, that was one of our big differences between industrial and light industrial. The industrial was originally created to have water and sewer because it was geared more towards a manufacturing process that was going to need it. At the end of the day, a lot of light industrial just becomes businesses that need bigger footprint of land, building space, but their actual water demand and septic service demand is fairly low, probably lower than, a 4-bedroom house at the end of the day. But and I think you need a balance of it in town. I mean, there's no doubt there's a housing shortage, but I think there is a industrial land use shortage too, and if we could actually identify something that could work.
And pretty much everything in Sachetello Industrial Park is
used. Yeah.
I was going to ask, that's exhausted at this point, right?
There is
relatively close. I think
there
could be a few more lots coming available, but
maybe.
We don't know yet.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's pretty, the Wild West has come to fruition. And
And that took quite a while to get going.
Because all the mills and much are gone, except for paper mill.
And thank God we have that paper mill.
Yeah, which just presented to the town council on Monday that they're investing $40 million into the upgrade of the plant. They've been there 30 years already now, and they're your number two taxpayer.
Number one.
Eversource is your number one taxpayer.
Eversource is the number one taxpayer in the state. Don't think about mud, though.
Okay, so any questions on the TIF for Dennis at this point? Go ahead.
All right, so we'll move on. Draft conditions to provide comments or draft regulations. Before we get into that one, just related to, we are going to have another round of edits coming your way at the next meeting or two. And this goes into the housing bill. Now that we've been able to kind of get our heads around that one fully before and understand it, and there's probably way too many conferences and webinars about it. Cottage, something or other. There's very specific requirements, and they have to be done as of right. So we just need to make sure our regulations are in line with this. This is
perfect sixes or two
for two. Yeah, it's three stories. Side by side.
Which will never happen, but yeah.
Also, we can't have minimum square footages anymore. Governed by building code, which building code really doesn't have any. We do have one or two places, particularly we don't have a minimum building size, floor plan of like 500 square feet, that can't be in there anymore. Senior housing, but that's, yeah, I thought there was something else that had it. And then, non-conformity, we just have to update the definition. But that's a lot of highlights, so I don't want to get to everything. We'll save that. Okay. The other one, and this is where I'm looking for feedback from you, back in January 14th.
Oh, yes.
Here is your book. We presented a number of zone changes, text amendments, definitions to parking, landscaping, around designations. We're looking for feedback to see if that opportunity to review and cross questions. If you think this is something you want us to move forward with, either in whole or in part, or not at all.
What exact section are
you talking about? Section 18, off-street parking?
Yeah, so it starts with 1.3, which is definitions. So you we can start there if you want.
1.3 definition.
Well, we put definition to the end, and you can start on section 17.
Okay, well, what?
Stacy, what section are we in?
A tab, please.
So the tab will be 4D1.
Okay.
Thank you. The tab prior to that, we had our table of permitted uses, right?
Where was that at?
Did anybody fill them out?
4D1.
Did you want us to turn them in? No, I'm serious.
Oh, wait till you get later on.
4D1?
Yep, 4D1.
I'm sorry. We're doing 4D1, right? The first 4D1?
I have two 4D1s.
Yeah, the first one, right? The first 4D1?
For definitions.
No. For definitions.
Yeah. Those might be backwards.
So what happened? Are you going crazy?
You might have gotten. I'm sure we might have had a bad day.
Is it right here?
Definitions. Okay, here we are.
Yep, definitions. Mm-hmm.
Definitions really are here to support specific elements of the rest of the proposed amendments. Unless you had an opportunity to read them or wanted to read them, they're really much more beneficial for staff from an enforcement as well as good guidance to applicants and the beneficial for applicants.
These are definitions and languages that we should be using, is your point.
Yes, well, we don't have them at all.
Right, right.
Right. Either we don't have them at all, or we should have them, or we don't have them, and we think we can use them now.
Yep, fully understand. Thank you.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Yep.
I love fenestration. Can't figure out how to put it in a sentence, but I love the word.
And if you don't have appurtenances, it might be.
Appurtenances? Just fenestrations, I think, is great. Just don't know how to put it in a sentence. Yeah. Appurtenances, I like that too. Yeah, that's a good one.
Anybody have anything on the definition?
Nah, that's good with those.
I mean, I've read through them.
What we saw and...
I guess, yes. Like, yeah.
I had no objections to anything you recommended.
I don't either.
Do we need motions or just like we agree?
No, nothing.
Just like we agree.
Yeah, we agree.
Okay, good.
Okay. Give me a thumbs up.
And then it would obviously...
Like emoji, there you go.
You'll get another stab at it when you come to the application.
Okay.
So if you're all set on the definitions, we can go to the next D1. Section 17, decision-making authority. This is all new. Refresh your memory. This is saying that under 17.2, this is saying that all site plan applications can be approved by staff. It does not have to come to the full commission unless one asking for a deviation, which is identified below, or you feel staff feels that it's probably most appropriate that it comes to you.
I agree with that.
I agree with that also.
Yeah.
And I think that, that the impression of coming here when we meet with the chairman before most meetings, in advance of most meetings, we probably would talk with the chairman too. And get some guidance from him as well.
And those applications will be on the agenda.
They'll be on the agenda for receipt, yes.
You'll receive them and then we'll
And we will have authority to grant an exception even though it violates
deviation?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what this is saying is if somebody wants to come in and ask for a deviation of up to 15%, for certain items in the regulations, that they would be able to come forth to you.
And we could grant that.
Yes.
Currently, you have a
of applicability of Section 17.3. So if somebody says, I don't want to do a full site plan, I'm nowhere near the wetlands and I don't want to show it, this commission can do a determination.
Currently, we can't do a blanket deviation.
Correct.
But with this, we would be able to do that.
Yes.
Okay.
And there are some areas where we're suggesting that it should not be done, and that is along residential districts to protect the residential use when there's non-conforming lots, or which will create non-conforming lots. Shouldn't be applied to open space or recreation requirements. It shouldn't be applied to
love it.
I think it's good.
Dennis.
Section 18, off-street parking regulations. This one didn't have
side section.
Yeah. This is the one that we stuck in.
We have the handout.
Yep.
Yes.
This one. Oh, there we go. Street parking regulation 18.1.
No, no, no. In red.
Yep, in red, yep. Yes. 18.1 general direction for off-street parking, blah, 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 blah.
It's in red, the one with the red.
Yeah. Red line. It's been
the
redlined.
Red line. Not the one in the book.
How many red lines?
No, not the one in the book.
John, it looks like this. It's got red lines.
Yeah.
Anybody mess up? Here you go, John.
Yeah. You probably don't want
to. I memorized.
So right here, a couple of housekeeping.
He said he memorized it.
He did say that.
Okay.
A couple of housekeeping matters where we just said, approved by the commission with the decision-making authority, which would be now defined.
Get back to off-street. The kind of bullshit we added to it.
The most significant change is to be consistent with the new statute for parking.
Yeah.
16 or fewer dwelling units, we cannot allow.
Yeah, I think bull crap.
We cannot require minimum parking spaces. Developer can say, I'm going to do 16 units, I'm not going to provide parking. You can't come out.
Does that include handicap?
Well, I mean, there's some certain realities.
Yes.
Okay.
Nice by holding it in parking.
So it does not include handicap. That's your answer, right?
That's going to be a slippery slope because depending on the type of units, they may be required to provide accessible dwelling units. Then that's where it gets dicey because accessible parking spaces is based on the number of parking spaces. So this is going to end up turning into a legal opinion from the state AG. In that situation.
We can't regulate parking, but handicap spaces are regulated by the building.
But it's based on the number of parking spaces provided, but if you have an accessible unit, you got to have accessible parking, so it's a roundabout.
Yeah, so we have the best shot to worry around.
Okay.
Why do you ask that question?
Yeah, okay.
That'll be my problem to figure out at this stage.
Yes. It'll be handicapped.
Greater than 16 units, you can suggest that a studio in one bedroom has one parking space. You can suggest that two or more bedrooms, dwelling units, have two parking. But you can't necessarily
require it.
But we just put in as that, and then we also said that the, this is pretty much copied verbatim from the statute, that the applicant can also submit a parking needs assessment to show that it meets the following items 1, 2, 3, and 4, which basically is a rubber stamp in some respects. You still can't deny an application showing an impact. My interpretation right now, the statute's clear, you do not deny solely based upon parking. Just so you know, where that comes from is that there are a number of communities out there, those that are have been anti-affordable housing, that have used parking to deny. for a safe, because you, under 830G, you can only deny for safety and welfare, or health and safety.
Health and safety.
Use parking as a safety.
Health and safety.
And the rest of the changes are basically cross-references to the new landscape section, lighting section, crossing out areas if they're already being addressed in other areas, you know, in new sections, or if they're duplicates. Mr. Summers, so I was silent on community parking.
There's a large push for EV parking spaces right now.
Oh, yes.
Of course, it is doors. Connecticut.
Silly season has started at the state.
Yeah, especially at stores and all that, too.
So, what I talked to the town planner before is a debate that's been going on, not in just Connecticut, but across the country, is installation of EV parking spaces. Some jurisdictions are saying those are above and beyond the minimum required parking spaces. Others saying they're part of it, but a lot of places are silent. It's undetermined, because some people are viewing EV parking spaces as a gas station. You're fueling up. So it's a debate that's going on across the country.
Well, how much did you just get a longer extension cord?
I was just going to say, give them an extension cord.
Yeah, you know, we park in an apartment house, and there's a thing there, just run it right there.
Some regulations require EV parking.
Right.
The state has requirements for EV parking.
Or
for certain types of projects. That
right, but a lot of developers are putting it in.
Yeah, well,
as part of their package.
Yeah, like you would.
And that should be, in my opinion, that should be included in the required parking.
Yeah,
but if it's residential, we don't care about that anyways.
You can't be
residential.
You don't have to have a parent thing. You got a thing, you know.
I mean, I almost feel like it just be silent and place out as a place out.
Yeah, I agree.
The 57 units that we approved a year ago.
Yeah.
Across from Port Shantan, they had EV parking. I counted them as.
I just wanted to bring it up because it is an issue.
Because there's nothing really stopping me from pulling into that spot and taking a seat on that. I asked Lieutenant Redford, he's like, "Give me a ticket."
I think that'll play out as it plays out. Right? It's either going to go the way or.
Sounds like there'll be another mandatory update.
Because for me, you have a solar panel on top of your roof, so you don't have to worry about it.
All right, we're good on the parking?
We're good on parking. Right, thumbs up.
Landscape design standards.
Yep.
This is the brand new section. I want to go back through it again. Performance standards up front, requiring parking and end islands, intermediate islands.
What section is that? Landscaping.
You're in 4D2.
4D2? 4D2. Okay. Landscaping.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I put to the tree. A couple bushes.
This is landscaping and parking. It's also landscaping up on the site in general.
Yep.
The landscaping and the parking is written is to avoid Susan asphalt, which is much more environmentally friendly, visually friendly.
Stop paving up to the property line.
Safety too, it helps to control.
Unfortunately, most of these areas look really sloppy and not well taken care of.
Oh, yeah.
In general, when you look around at these kind of.
Yeah, a lot of times they don't.
I don't know how you get any teeth to this to make sure people actually maintain them.
Yeah, you could chime in, but We haven't finished drafting it, but a bonding and maintenance section that says usually that you do have something in that, that land, all landscaped areas must be maintained. Dying shall be removed and replaced. Well, you know, and there's a performance there. It gives the CEO the ability to approval, and it gives her the ability to go in and issue a violation.
Who determines the vegetation that goes in there?
A landscape architect.
Yeah.
This requires a landscape architect to do the plan. There was, I also have lists of, if they're designated as street trees, I reference,
I like this.
Elements.
In the middle. People park instead of walking down where people,
DOT has
they walk down here.
Yeah, I like elms.
How many times I'm backing out at Walmart or something? People just walk right behind you.
Yeah.
And they yell at you.
You like the one folks sprayed up like that, not that.
Yeah, you know, that's
the thing. Mabel Fair Shade.
I have a 2011, it doesn't matter.
Like the new American elm tree. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
New American elm. The new American elm is a very hardy tree.
Yeah.
That's a good tree versus a white pine, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, because elms, they were like in New England.
We have something ammo for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, invasive.
Just a general comment on 18B5, parking area landscaping. I really like the ones on the end, not the one in the middle, where there is a pedestrian walk between the cars that face each other. Mm-hmm. You know, so that people aren't walking behind moving vehicles in where the cars drive. I can't tell you how many times I've nearly hit somebody backing out of a parking spot at Walmart's where people just step right behind you when you're already moving. Then they yell at you. You know, I really like this. And it would be nice if planning and zoning could somehow incorporate at least a suggestion to a contractor.
That's what we're trying to do in here.
Yeah.
And what I was trying to do with the wording and what will be more refined in the diagram is, especially at main entrances, that there's a refuge for pedestrians as they cross.
Yeah,
we're
actually asking for deciduous trees. Deciduous tree. Shade tree right here. Versus converse.
Considering we have nothing in our zoning regs regarding landscaping, I think this is a big win.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah,
this
is a big win.
Dennis?
We get double on that one.
Yeah.
So I guess we approve that. Moving on. Lighting.
Anything more on landscaping? We good there?
That was my only comment.
It was a good one.
43. Well, I have a... All right, so I'm going to...
Lighting. Standard, Joe.
So this is all new as well. This gets down into really the nitty and gritty of making sure that the lighting plan is prepared by... an appropriate certified designer or engineer. It needs to show all of the foot candles, so it needs a full photometric plan as well. No light solution to zone or property lines, cutting down on the layer. Pictures, I didn't realize it was called it. They're bug pictures. They're stands for glare rating, so there's no backlight, uplight, or glare. But reduced glare. Glare is very subjective. There was, and just so the commission, I don't know if we brought it up before, but where is it?
393
Butler. Yeah, Butlertown, 393 Butlertown. Yeah. There's lighting out there, but we had no lighting standards, and there was a residence that was adjacent that had been complaining profusely to us. Fortunately, the developer has worked with us to basically follow these. So hopefully they're helping. I don't know if this person will ever be satisfied anyways, but but light fixtures were changed out to be able to help with some glare. We got a photometric plan, like I said. But this shows the importance of having something to help protect and even people that are driving and the environment too. So it goes right into lighting temperatures. When I say lighting temperatures, that's the color of the light.
You did address 2E about the Board of Education, right? We talked about that last time. 2E.
So uses exempt from this regulation are town of Monroe government state facilities. Does not include Board of Education users or facilities.
That's because our kids are so bright.
I left it in there. I did not change these yet. Because
right.
So it's been my experience, both as a designer, I've worked on construction and design of schools throughout the state in my career, and they always had to comply with zoning to the highest of standards of everybody else. They've never been omitted or exempted. So this would probably be a first if you're going to say that one of them, especially, you know, if they're residential.
Well, it says it doesn't affect us at the Board of Ed. Does not include us.
So exempt from these regulations are single family. So this is saying the Board of Ed is not exempt.
Is not exempt.
Right.
Not exempt.
Yeah. So let's talk about activities. Football games at night, that's fine. That's all within the parameters, right? That's all good?
There is a section in here on...
that lights up the neighborhood pretty nice.
Yeah, like a big old searchlight.
But you got to turn it off.
Temporary lighting.
Yeah, we have 18C10 is outdoor recreation.
Yeah. I just want to make sure that covers that.
Yep.
Thank you.
Have you thought about the light pole bases? Because I see a lot of light pole bases made out of HDPE pipe.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Are they filled with concrete?
Yeah.
Lights are on?
Some reason it makes sense, but
stronger than the regular sound.
What did you say they were made out of?
What's that?
Are they filled with concrete or is it just HDPE?
HDPE filled with concrete.
Yeah,
but so they leave the pipe there.
Yeah, but they leave the pipe there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Instead of using that, you know, black corrugated pipe.
Cut it off of there. It's hard, right?
That's what those are. Huh?
So what I did say here on light pole foundations, light poles shall not exceed 24 feet high, except in certain residential areas.
Also black ash.
Oh.
20 feet, no more than 24 feet. If it's, and this is for parking areas. Foundations shall not be exposed more than 18 inches. Did not mention anything that they have to be exposed concrete and not covered by.
Yeah, it just looks like crap.
I did say also that I distinguished between parking areas and walkways and courts. I said light poles adjacent to walkways and within courts and entries shall not exceed 16 feet and foundations shall be flush to the finished grade and screened by light pole bases. So that way pedestrian areas are more pedestrian friendly, whether they're just your typical shoebox. But if you're going to have to put light poles out in the middle of a parking lot, it might not be able to be coordinated directly with where an island is, so we're going to block the concrete to protect them. I mean, I could put something in there to not have
just a
HD. I mean,
it's an idea.
Dennis, when we work within the Route 32163 redevelopment areas, will we be creating like standards within that region where, with a certain light fixture perhaps and a certain light base, is that something that may get put into the zoning reg in that?
Yeah, I don't think it'd be so much in the zoning reg as it would be more a design guideline. And that's where the design guidelines come in. And there's gray areas of how much you can regulate the design. Mm-hmm. So
I think what he's talking about is uniformity within that zone.
Yeah, no, I follow what you're saying, and you would cross-reference, so let's say the C1 districts are now going to be called Design District 1, okay?
Yeah.
Design District 1's new zoning regulation would say all development shall adhere to the design regulations as design guidelines, design standards as outlined in blank document, standalone document. And then in there you get into all the details of it, including that could be giving guidance on the type of light pole fixture.
It's kind of, to me, it kind of ties in almost with the landscaping requirement.
Yeah.
You know, sidewalk width will be minimum this, will be concrete, so somebody doesn't break their neck.
I don't know if there's some nuances, where can you draw the line of what, how you require somebody to use a certain exact fixture.
Yeah.
But color and style, to get close to at least. Maybe it's within a certain area.
Just curious, you know how that could get all mismatched.
Yeah,
uniformity.
We like that.
All right, lighting. Lighting.
Thumbs up.
So I think a necessary site, a person exists.
I had to look that word up.
Yeah.
This is location of your trash bins and utilities. This gives flexibility, so if a utility provider has specific standards, that overrides the zoning.
Usually does.
Anything in there?
I thought that was good.
Blink wall, the BTV, blink wall, and new fenestration. Who likes that?
Yeah, I like that word.
This is the first step at trying to do something with regulating design.
Something like shutters on your house?
What's that?
Like the shutters on your house?
Yeah. So, but mainly, it's, light walls can really be too detrimental to the street. This might be something that we think about leaving out for now, when we get to the design standards down the road. It might be better off. And then the last one is snow storage. I don't know if you thought this was over the top, but this is something that's usually asked.
Oh, yeah.
Big problem, I've seen a regulation similar to this in the past, but it makes people think about where they're and how they're storing it and how they're coordinating it with everything else on site.
I don't even see how it's enforceable.
Yeah.
People are finding anywhere possible to put it.
At the end of their driveway.
It is certainly a question that commissioners do ask, though, almost every time somebody presents.
Yep.
We can put it in there somewhere that maybe just says,
maybe a guideline, some guidelines or.
Yeah, especially.
I mean, it's in some of the E&S stormwater notes that you can't use your detention basin as. Snow storage.
Yeah. Anything that'll end up going through the storm pipes down to the river.
Yeah.
But yet when it melts, it goes in the storm pipes down the river.
Well,
that's not how it should be done. It should be the stormwater management plan should be designed such that separate oil and water.
Yeah.
Positioned as such, but there is no melt. It's going into the system and being treated before it goes into the detention area, and the detention area treating it even further, and not dumping it down the hill.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it can't impede the function of the stormwater quality system.
We can maybe do is put something specific like that in there, so that way if something does start doing something that's completely a violation, then we have something to fall back on.
Well,
they see a big hole and they push it.
Yeah, or a good example like at Stop and Shop. They just pile a big pile there and wait for nature to take care of it.
Well, and again, if they have enough adequate parking, that's great.
Yeah.
And it also makes a developer
think that if they want to come in and utilize every square inch of a parcel, then
right.
they're going to be at the mercy of hauling their snow away
yeah.
to maintain a safe sight line, a clean sidewalk, and not put the snow in the wrong place on the property.
Yeah.
I can't talk.
You know, that's going to become, in my opinion, you know, maybe we'll never get another winter like this. But, we do.
Arctic vortex.
And where do you,
yeah, just put a snow
you know, we have to consider, or the developer has to consider it. I've designed something on every square inch, you know, in these conditions of approval, you know, you're going to be responsible for storage or removal of your snow off-site, whatever that costs.
This might be a good place to actually insert the appropriate regulations for the contractor to reference rather than try to spell them out.
Yeah, how are they going to take care of the snow?
Because if you spell them out, then if the regulations get updated, you've got to change this. So just cite the regulations.
Yeah, because like up in Canada, like in Montreal, how they take care of the snow is, they take it for free, put it in a pallet, and then they blow in big trucks, haul off to a place, like a water treatment facility, it melts there, and then it's processed, you know, instead of just saying, well, let nature take its course, you know. Thank you. Oh, there.
You guys have any other questions before we adjourn?
Nah.
Good job on the grant application. Yes. Thank you. Good job on this. It's a lot of work. This is more than these commissions have ever seen in the past. So
I'll keep this my D. Keep it right here. I'll lose it. Keep this all together. I don't know where it is.
Good. All right, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Can you keep this?